Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the band is out on the field. He's looking for the ball. We are so away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's full of that. Smith caught him right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks.
Let's get into it. Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good!
Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Ha!
Hello,
let's get
and welcome started to the Let's Get It Started. I'm here with our favorite guest today. He's switching roles again. It's Bubba. How you doing, Bubba?
I'm doing great, Xander. What's going on, my boy?
Not much. We get another great week in sports. NBA Finals are in full force, and you know, I think my prediction of Warriors in five is looking pretty good. What do you think?
Well, I think that they kicked the crap out of them a couple of times in Golden State, but of course they got a little beat down the other day, and I think there might be a little problem with Klay Thompson. You know, got a little bit of injured the other night, so. But I certainly think that Golden State is the much better team, and certainly I think they'll beat them. I thought they had a chance to sweep them, but now I think it might turn into a real series.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing about it is I think this whole NBA playoffs has been relatively weak. I mean, I was looking at a stat they showed at the end of the game on a Wednesday night that there's been more, you know, 25-point blow-offs in this playoffs than in any other playoffs in NBA history, and I think it really speaks to – I mean, how the competition has been. I mean, the most compelling series to me was probably Golden State against the Thunder, and that was only because they were down 3-1. But, you know, none of those games are really that close. And in the NBA Finals right now, I mean, we've seen three games and three blowouts. So it's tough to get a read, and it's not really enjoyable to watch, I think, as a fan, because, you know, I want to see close games, and I don't want to see the Cavs or Warriors winning by 30 points.
No, I get that. What I see is a league that has become, you know, the rules of so much change the game that the games are just crappy games. I mean, you know, one thing about the NBA compared to college, is it's never really that exciting, and you typically don't see a lot of great games anymore because the talent pool is so diluted and the rules are so different that to me the game has changed. I watch as little NBA as possible. In fact, I've watched maybe 3 minutes of this entire the entire final so far.
Well, you haven't missed much. I mean, hasn't been much going on. You know, take a couple notes away from the game. I think the most amazing player for me in the series so far has to be Richard Jefferson. I mean, I know what LeBron's done. Played pretty crappy the first two games. Third game came out and put up, you know, basically a triple-double. But, I mean, Richard Jefferson coming off the bench to start game three, I think was really the difference maker for the Cavs. I mean, the first two games, defense was atrocious. Kevin Love wasn't getting anything done, you know, was one of the worst pick-and-roll defenders, and especially against the great shooting Golden State team, wasn't getting it done. And I feel like they have to roll with Jefferson in game four because, I mean, defense is going to be the key if the Cavs want to take down Golden State.
I mean, the key is always a defense. You know, we talk about this on a regular basis when we're talking about investments, and defense is always the key in anything. And certainly Jefferson he's been resting all year, ready to go for the playoffs. So certainly that would be one of the keys as far as I'm concerned as well.
Right, and it seems like he's been in the league for about 30 years now. I mean, you know, one of his best teammates on that early 2000s Knicks team, Jason Kidd, has been coaching for 3 years already. So that gives you a little look into how old he is. But, I mean, the guy's been playing some great basketball. Kyrie Irving really showed up in game three and put up 30 points. And another point I wanted to talk about, You know, Steph Curry has had a brutal NBA final so far. I know that they're up 2-1, but I mean, he really hasn't taken that much heat, you know, in comparison to LeBron James, game one and two, taking a ton of heat for his performance. You know, what are your thoughts on the standards that, you know, Steph Curry and LeBron are held to? Because it seems to me, although Curry is the MVP of the league right now, I think the standards are completely different.
Well, I mean, you know, LeBron is, you know, the King James, and King James is one thing. And don't forget, King James has, although been to the finals, what, 6 years in a row now, has left a lot of people disappointed because he's supposed to be the second coming. And, you know, Seth Curry is a little guy that just puts up a lot of points and runs the team and runs the ship. So they're two really completely different players. And although they're both important to their team, I think that looking at it, I mean, I think Golden State would have a better chance without Steph, where without LeBron, Cleveland would have no chance.
Right, I 100% agree with that. I mean, Steph Curry, you know, like I said, is the MVP of the league right now, but LeBron James is one of those transcendent players that you hold to that high of a standard. I mean, I wouldn't put him in the same category as Jordan, but you know, in terms of value to his team and the scrutiny day in and day out, like a guy like that faces, I mean, it falls all on his shoulders. You know, win or lose, you know, he's the guy that takes the fall. And that's what I really haven't seen from the media in particular about Steph Curry. I mean, the guy hasn't put up, you know, less than 50 points in a three-game stretch the whole season, and he's got 48 combined through the finals so far. So taking a look at Game 4, Cleveland's a 2-point favorite at home right now. I personally like the Warriors. I think they got pushed around a little bit in Game 3, and I think they come out with a little chip on their shoulder in Game 4. Draymond Green's got to play better on the inside. They can't get pushed around. You know, they obviously got to shoot a little better, and I think, you know, Steph Curry, the main man's got to show up a little bit.
Well, you know, look, it comes on the defense, and they've been focusing their efforts on Curry. But, you know, again, you know, back to your original statement, you know, LeBron anointed himself as the greatest guy ever. And here we are, you know, Steph Curry is just a teammate of this team. He does not stand out other than his ability to score. But the team plays as a team. And I think that's the biggest difference. And LeBron, I mean, and the other difference is LeBron could have played in the era before because that's how good he is. And that's the type of body he's got. But again, he's really been more of just a great player, and he should be held to a higher standard because he put himself in that own light when he did his you know, the decision, all the crap he's done over the years. He deserves to get more scrutiny.
Right, and I agree with that. So, you know, basically takeaways from the series so far, physicality was, I think, the main difference for the Cavs in Game 3. They played some great defense, and I think that's what a lot of people forget about, you know, this big three with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love is, you know, back when LeBron James was on the Heat, you know, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh were great players, but they really also excelled on the defensive end of the floor. And that's where the Cavs have gotten killed the last 2 years, is the defense hasn't been there. So that's why I think, you know, they stick with Richard Jefferson in the starting lineup. But overall, I just don't think it's enough. I think LeBron comes home disappointed again. And, you know, we look towards next year. You know, it'll be interesting to see if LeBron stays in Cleveland. I really don't see it, you know, any other scenario for him unless he wants to be the most hated player in the history of the NBA. But if the Cavs end up do taking Game 4, I think that completely changes the series. It shows me that the Cavs do have a shot to win. I mean, I didn't figure they'd win in 30-point fashion, but I did figure they'd take a game at home no matter how badly they were getting beaten in this series. I think that's just a function of, you know, having the best player in the NBA in LeBron James playing in front of your home court. I think it definitely shows, you know, how good he is as a player. But, you know, we've got a great series so far, and hopefully I'm hoping Golden State takes home the title because, you know, I like Steph Curry, I like Klay Thompson and all those guys. And we'll see if LeBron can pick it up the next couple games. So this is it for the Sporting Edge. In this segment, we'll be back with more on the U.S. Open.
Technically, no, but
I'm smarter than the devil.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Dan and Bubba. Bubba, you had some thoughts about the big three in the last segment. What do you think?
No, I don't think you can look at them as a big three. I mean, you know, LeBron is great. I mean, he's a great talent. But the big three here is not the big three. I mean, Kyrie Irving is yet to prove that he's as good as everybody says he is. And Kevin Love, it never shows up. He's always, like, disappearing. Now he's out with, another concussion. I mean, again, I look at these guys as good role players. But the true test of a champion, if you go back to Michael Jordan, and I know we compare him to Michael Jordan, but the true test is Michael Jordan took a cast of characters. He had Scottie Pippen, but he took a cast of characters that weren't necessarily supposedly in the same talent range as guys here and made them stars. I mean, Bill Cartwright, he made a star. He made Steve Kerr hit them on the biggest side, like John Paxson. I mean, everybody he touched became better. I don't think this is a big three. I think this is just two guys that are okay players and certainly not, in my opinion, as good as they're made out to be.
Yeah, I do tend to agree with you. I think the big three, I think that name kind of came out when this deal was originally made for Kevin Love, and we already had Kyrie Irving on the team. But yeah, I think Kevin Love has kind of proved to be a disappointment over the past 2 years, and it kind of makes you wonder, what could have been for the Cavs if they had kept Andrew Wiggins, who looks to be one of the best, young up-and-coming players in the NBA. I just wonder, if Kevin Love wasn't on this team, which he doesn't really contribute that much anyways in my eyes, what could have happened if they had kept those picks and kept Andrew Wiggins? Maybe this team could have been in playoff or title contention for, the next 7 or 8 years instead of the 3 or 4 year window I think they're in right now.
No, I agree with that. And again, I didn't like the trade to begin with. I was never a big fan of Kevin Love anyways. He's hurt every year, and all he's proved is that he can play good on a team that's got nothing to play for. So, at the end of the day, I don't see it. And, I'm not a fan, and I'm not a fan of LeBron. I'm not a fan of the entire situation. And at the end of the day, I think they get their asses kicked again.
Well, we'll see about that. We got Game 4 coming up tonight. So, we've tired out the basketball. Let's move on to a little golf. We got the U.S. Open coming up this week, and the word on the street from a lot of guys is that Oakmont is going to be one of the toughest courses that these guys have ever played on. Phil Mickelson came out and said, this is going to be a very hard course, extremely challenging. A couple other guys have said the winner of this tournament will be over par. It's going to challenge these guys tee to green. Super fast greens, don't necessarily need to use the driver a lot, but you're going to need to keep the ball in play. Bub, do you have any thoughts on the Open this week?
No, I think that, first of all, everybody forgets that the U.S. Open course is always at par 70 instead of a par 72. Okay, so that already takes 8 shots off and takes away 2 of the par 5s, which are usually big birdie holes. The U.S. Open is always set up to be extremely tough, but a lot will come down to the weather. If it's dry and hot, the court that's going to be over par. But if they get rain, if you get soft greens, these guys are so good. They're like throwing darts from 150 to 200 yards onto a surface. So they're going to rip it apart as they do now almost every course. But they're going to make the conditions will be as tough. They'll be the toughest conditions of the year. However, if the weather does not cooperate and it's not warm and dry and the greens aren't hard, then that changes the game no matter what happens. Because once you see how these greens roll, that's where all the scoring is done anyway. So I think it's got a chance. And if you looked over the history, most of the U.S. Opens are either near or over par. But when you get ultimate playing conditions, you get a little rain. And especially if you had like too much rain and you get clean in place, they'll rip the course apart. But again, the overall story will be the weather. And if it's dry and hot, it might be 4 or 5 over that wins that tournament.
So, I mean, Phil Mickelson has come in this tournament second place 6 times. Do you think he has enough to win it and get that career slam?
Maybe he'll pull the old Payne Stewart and win it on Father's Day. Payne Stewart was very similar to Phil Mickelson and kept being a runner-up. And then finally, one Father's Day, he pulled it off. And, of course, the U.S. Open is always on Father's Day weekend. So maybe this will be Mickelson's time. Certainly he's got the game to do it. But one of the things I'd worry about with Mickelson, if the greens are treacherous, which is the whole key here, then I think, he's great. And he'll make unbelievable putts, and then he'll miss ones that are like, you can't believe he missed them. So he needs a lot of things to go good for him to win, especially if the conditions are as tough as he's saying they're going to be and as tough as they could be. So overall, I think he can do it. And, you know, it always takes a little bit of luck. You know, we know how in every sport to get that championship, it always takes a little bit of luck. But I think he can do it. But I think if the conditions are really tough, I think he'll have a struggle.
Right, and that's what's great about, you know, the majors in golf. We get 4 days, you know, sit on your couch all day, do whatever you want. They end on Sunday. It should be a lot of fun. I think the U.S. Open is probably my favorite tournament to watch because, you know, it's really fun watching, you know, the best guys in the world at what they do struggle a little bit. It kind of gives you a little perspective on how difficult and how challenging, you know, that course can be. But, you know, I thought we'd move on and talk a little bit of NFL. Some interesting words came out of Trent Richardson's mouth this past week. Says he plans to end up his career in the Hall of Fame. Now, if I've seen anything out of Trent Richardson the past 3 years, he's been anything but a Hall of Fame player. You'd even say he's not even starter caliber with his 3.3 yards per carry. But what are your thoughts on the guy? I mean, I know he was a star in college, but has he really had the gall and the work ethic to come back and even be a capable player in this league?
Well, I'll tell you what. Right now, he couldn't get in the Hall of Fame of a high school team. So I think he was great in college, but I think we get confused a lot by players that are great in college and then try to transfer that to the pros. Remember, like a team like Alabama, where Richardson came from, they're going to dominate most of their opponents anyways. They've produced very few great running backs in the NFL. And, of course, I hate to bring back bad memories. You won't remember this, but when the Bears drafted Rashawn Salaam from Colorado, you know, they ran a whole different kind of offense. I mean, Salaam ran for 2,000 yards in college, and he couldn't run for 2 feet in the pros. I think Trent Richardson has no chance to be a Hall of Famer. I don't care if he puts together 3 seasons in a row now of 2,000 yards. He's got too many bad seasons underneath his skin already. He's not that good, and I don't see a breakout coming. In fact, Nick Saban has been known to wear down a lot of these guys while they're in college. And if you've watched enough, running backs have a very limited life. There's very few exceptions. You know, Walter Payton won, Adrian Peterson, and some of the others. But other than that, they have a very limited lifespan. And when you get over-abused in college, it's hard to bring that to the pro level.
All right, well, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I mean, you know, Trent Richardson had a great college career, but if you forget, a long time ago, 3 or 4 years ago, he did have a great rookie year. I mean, rushed for over 1,200 yards and had, I think, 12 or 13 touchdowns. But it kind of makes you think back to that trade that the Browns made with the Colts, you know, trading away Richardson for a first-round pick. You know, it kind of didn't make any sense, at least to, I think, a lot of the public, because, you know, you just drafted this guy in the first round. And he had a great year. He was a rookie. He's a great running back. And then you trade another first-round pick for him. You know, it's kind of like you already kind of delivered on, you know, on the first-round pick. You got a great rookie running back. So that makes me wonder. I want to kind of pick the brains a little bit of the Browns general management and see what they saw in Trent Richardson, because he really fell off the map, and he fell off right away. I mean, I think he barely made the Colts roster that year. But, you know, all the power to him. If he thinks he can be a Hall of Fame player, you know, I'm not going to doubt him yet. You know, I think he'd have to put together about a decade's worth of Barry Sanders highlights if he wanted to even sniff the Hall of Fame. But, you know, the one thing about Trent Richardson, if you remember in college, the guy was a physical freak. You know, ran a 4.3 in the 40 and was also one of the strongest guys in college football. Yeah, so it kind of makes you wonder where all that great stuff went. But, you know, time will tell. A little bit of more news on the NFL. Allen Hurns recently came out, and it's found that he is allergic to grass. Allen Hurns had a great year for the Jags last year, along with Allen Robinson. It was a great receiving core. Just got signed to a $40 million contract, and I think that's just funny that in a sport where you basically play on all grass fields, that you'd be allergic to grass. He actually says it's not that bad, though. You know, throat doesn't swell up, nothing like that. So it just a little itch and a little rash here and there, so it shouldn't be too bad. But, you know, let's hope it stays under control with the Jags giving him $20 million of guaranteed money. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching this Jags offense next year. You know, Blake Bortles, T.J. Yeldon, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns. I mean, they should do some great stuff. You know, this is The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba here on LibertyTalk.fm. We will see you next segment for some talk on the MLB.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We ended last segment. We'll talk about Alan Hearns. We'll talk about Trent Richardson and his Hall of Fame chances. But I think the biggest piece of news so far, Bub, is, you know, Von Miller turning down that six-year, $114 million offer. You know, I think that's a big blow to the Broncos if they can't sign him. I mean, we saw how successful they were in the playoffs, and it was all about the defense. I mean, if you remember back to the AFC Championship game, you know, Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, they were the two key cogs that really forced Brady into some tough spots. And the Super Bowl, I mean, Peyton Manning had a good first quarter, but, you know, fell asleep for the next three quarters, but it was that defense that really carried the torch. So, I mean, how important is it for the Broncos to get back Von Miller this season?
I think it's really important for him to get Von Miller, and of course, I'm sure they'll work something out. But, you know, obviously the $140 million, which we know in the NFL, is more BS than anything else. It depends on how much upfront money, and obviously they're not dropping enough money up front. I believe they'll get a deal done, but I think they're playing a little hardball. I mean, listen, they get to rest on their laurels a little bit. They did win the Super Bowl, and they're going to have a rough year this year anyways. Maybe they'll end up dumping them.
Yeah, I don't know if I see John Elway doing that. I mean, they already let the quarterback situation slip away a little bit. You know, they got Mark Sanchez now. You know, and Paxton Lynch, I just don't know if that's the right way to go. I know they won the Super Bowl this year with some very below-average quarterbacking, but you got to wonder with, you know, a guy like Mark Sanchez who, you know, might be on the same skill level right now as Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning, one thing the guy did have, you know, he does have the best mind in football, so regardless of his talent, you know, the guy brought the team there, and they did win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but again, I don't know. You know, like I said, they've got the laurels to rest on, and, you know, as you know in football, although it's great to have that one guy doesn't win it, and, you know, you've seen New England, they keep plugging and playing and keep going, so we'll see. You know, we'll see where it goes from here.
So this is our last big week of horse racing for the year. We got the Belmont Stakes. Race is scheduled for 6:50 p.m. on Saturday. You know, we're not going to have a Triple Crown winner this year, so that's a little disappointing. Not from my end, because I didn't really want to see one again after we had one last year, but got some of the same horses running in this race as we did in the Derby and the Preakness. So, Bub, I mean, what do you see from the race? What's it going to take to win this one?
Now, this race is a real test. They go from a mile and a quarter to a mile and 3/16, and now it's a mile and a half. And this is a real test of durability for these young three-year-olds. I think you know, if the pace is too fast, there'll be a horse come from off the pace. They've got a couple of fresh horses coming in here, so we'll see how it goes. But you know, obviously not as exciting as it would be if there was a Triple Crown run here. But I think that Exaggerator looks good. Out of the 11 posts, I don't think he'll win. I think he'll make a late run. I like Destin coming in here with the Castellano on him and in the two-hole. And I like, again, I like to look for another big race out of Cherry Wine. So I'm going to play the Cherry Wine, Destin, and Exaggerator in a trifecta, 2, 3, and 11. It's not a big race. It's not real exciting. And prices are a little bit better here, but I like a couple of the medium price horses here, so that's what I'm looking at.
Okay, so let's go through a little breakdown of the odds. We got 13 horses in this race. Destin, like you said, is 9-1. We got Exaggerator, I think, is the favorite right now at 5-4. A horse that I'm looking at is coming out of the 10 slot, and Lonnie, I think, 16-1. Not the greatest odds, but it doesn't really matter. You bet on a horse, you want the odds to be as high, or whatever way you look at it, as low as possible to make the biggest stake. So I also like Destin. I'm a big fan. I think having a good jockey is really important in this kind of race, because a mile and a half, it's the longest race some of these horses will ever run. So if I'm gonna make a play, I'm gonna go with the 2 in Destin, the 10 and the 11 Exaggerator. So I'm gonna do the 2, 10, 11 box. That's what I'm looking at. Should be an exciting race, the last big horse race of the year. So I know we'll be watching it at home here, and hopefully you guys get a chance to as well. We had a big night in the MLB on Thursday. We had the first year player draft, and the thing about this draft is it's probably the least exciting out of all the drafts, because the major league in baseball, to get to the majors, usually guys have to go through 3 or 4 leagues first. So you hear a guy get drafted, you might not hear his name again for another 3 or 4 years. But nonetheless, it's a very exciting time. A lot of kids drafted out of high school. And then the cool thing about it is you get guys drafted out of high school and you get guys drafted out of college. So that's where the real test is, how well can these teams project potential, and are they going for that top potential, or are they going to take a seasoned college veteran who's been playing well? So, Bub, we watched a draft a little bit last night. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, I thought the draft on Thursday was pretty good. I think that, it was interesting some of the guys played, and of course you mentioned, there's guys that will go for the college kids that have played a little bit more. They can project them a little bit better. But then there's a lot that will go for that raw talent right out of high school. And I think obviously we saw the number one pick, Mickey Maniak, supposedly one of the best in the draft. But I thought the most interesting is the kid that was drafted fourth, Riley Pint, throws 102 miles an hour in high school. I think that's pretty unbelievable. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's... ridiculous is the only word I can think about. I remember I played high school baseball and I never saw anything close to 100 miles an hour. It was crazy. They were talking about his stat line and they were baffled that he gave up 22 hits in 60 innings in high school. Think about what kid, besides maybe 2 or 3 could hit 100 mile an hour fastball. But this guy, pitches in the high 90s, which is unbelievable. And it's interesting to project out these high school pitchers, because even the high school hitters, you really don't face anywhere near the competition that you'll face in pro ball.
Well, that goes into a lot of all the sports, other than basketball. I think basketball is the most equally weighted, but in baseball, you've got to project out and number one and number two. Listen, Kyle Farnsworth threw over 100 miles an hour 20 years ago. And he never really made it. He's hung around because he throws 100, but he was never a star. Not only do you have to throw 100, you've got to be able to move the ball and locate and have another pitch to go along with it. Hence, you've got to look at Steven Strasburg. Other than his injury problems, he's dominating when he's right. And, this Riley Pint's got a chance to be dominating when he's right because, again, that speed, if you can come up with another pitch, is unhittable. But again, if it's a flat fastball at 102, it doesn't matter. If it's 150, if it's flat, these guys are going to hit it because that's, good hitters and good pitchers. A guy who hits 220 in the majors is a great hitter. He may not be a great hitter when you're looking for him there, but overall, he's unbelievable because that's how he got there. And, of course, the talent pool is the biggest in baseball because everybody's got A, AA, AAA, independents, affiliates. There's so many people still playing baseball that to get to that ultimate level of the 32 teams or whatever it is unbelievable, and the talent to even get there is sick. So if he has another pitch and he finds one, he could be up very quickly. We just saw with the Dodgers, Urias come up as, I think, 19 years old or whatever he is, and, he's got the savvy, he's got the pitches, he hasn't performed great yet, but he's got it all, and that's what they're looking for. And they're not afraid anymore, as they used to be, to bring kids up faster. You saw it with Trout, Harper, Strasburg, and a couple of the others, but it's a hard sport because these guys are really good, and it's a big talent pool.
Right, and that's why I think a major league hitter in baseball, I think, is probably the most impressive thing that I've ever noted in sports. But taking a look at the rest of the top 10, we had Corey Ray drafted out of Louisville for the Brewers with the fifth pick. This is actually the highest draft pick with a kid from Chicago, Corey Ray went to Simeon, since 1989, and he was the highest drafted player in Louisville history, surpassing his teammate Kyle Funkhauser, who was taken with the 35th overall pick in 2015. I think Corey Ray, you know, might be one of the best college prospects in this draft. I mean, the guy, you know, has great speed, great power. Isn't that big? He's about 5'10", 190 pounds, but I mean, he looks to be a great player. Probably going to be an average defensively, but I mean, the guy's got a lot of power and a lot of speed, and looks to be, you know, I hate to compare people to Barry Bonds, but a guy with power and speed who can see swipe bags and hit homers.
Now, I liked him a lot. I think he was really good. I really liked about him. I liked his maturity when he was talking, you know, when I saw his interview. You know, again, it's a tough sport, but and it's really unusual, a kid from the inner city coming in and just really sounded well-rounded and ready to go and understood the competition of the game, not just the game.
Right, and then the biggest surprise for me was A.J. Puk falling down to number 6. I thought this guy had the best potential in the draft, but, you know, his control is a little off for Florida. So, Bub, you got 15 seconds. What did you think about the Manny Machado thing with Yordano Ventura?
Well, I think that it was fine. I think he did the right thing. I think the league did the right thing in finding him and suspending him, but I think that Ventura did not get a long enough suspension, but we'll have to talk about that another day. I think that pitcher suspensions have to be longer than 8 or 9 games because really only one or two starts where Baltimore is going to be without Machado for 4 full games. So I think that is an unfair advantage. And the last thing is I think DeGrom was also a big pull. He was slated as one of the number 1 picks in draft as well. But yeah, I know you got to get going, so that's it.
Right, he was a big pull, and I do disagree a little bit about the suspension, but like I said, we'll talk about it next week. This is The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. You miss an episode, you find us on libertytalk.fm. This wraps up the third segment, and we're moving on to MLB for the next one, and we'll see you next segment. Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. Last segment here, and you know what we're talking about. We're talking about Major League Baseball. We're about a third of the way through the season, and it goes by quick, doesn't it, Bub?
It's too quick, except my team sucks, so I'm kind of hoping either something turns around or it gets over already. But it does go by quick, and you know, obviously when you play every day, which is one of the things you got to love about, you know, fantasy baseball is they play every day, and you got action every day. But I think that the divisions are some are heating up, and of course, last week you said to me, I said Houston is dead, and you said no, they're not, and you know, all of a sudden they're only a couple of games under 500 right now, and I know that was one of the things you were watching. And what do you see?
Well, I mean, that move, you know, George Springer to the top of the lineup, it's worked miracles for him. I think one of the most interesting things of the whole MLB season so far was a couple days ago. We were sitting in your office talking about, you know, Houston traveling to Texas to take on Cole Hamels with Dallas Keuchel on the mound. You know, and I told you the game was about a picket, and he looked at me with these crazy eyes, and I felt the same way. I mean, Dallas Keuchel has been nowhere near the pitcher that he was last year. But, I mean, under that hidden 550 ERA, the guy's actually not pitching that bad, you know, in terms of the thing called Sierra, which is, another form of fielding independent pitching. It's another way to look at how you're actually pitching, you know, with an average defense and an average amount of balls in play. So, I mean, this Houston team, I think they've got some things turning around for them. I mean, pitching's starting to get a little better. They're 7-3 in their last 10. But at the same time, this Texas Rangers team is 8-2 in their last 10. They're on fire. Rougned Odor, Jurickson Profar, Yu Darvish. I mean, these guys are doing big things for the Rangers, and I think, like I said last week, they're a huge dark horse to win the World Series.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. You know, one of the things I know about sports, if you can't beat the team ahead of you, which Houston is winning at about a 15% clip against Texas, that's going to be a problem. I think Texas is better. I think Houston is. Had a great dream season last year. They had everything fell together. But you can see this year, to me, they're struggling a little bit. Korea is struggling a little bit. They're not getting the bopping of all the home runs they were getting before. You know, Valbuena is just, you know, a regular player again. They gave up Chris Carter. So, you know, I think that you're seeing a decent team. I mean, but, you know, Keuchel, I was surprised he pitched so well. He did lose that game, so we were right in our opinion, but he did. It was obviously a 2-2 game, you know, going into the ninth, so you can't figure that. But, you know, I think that the Astros are still dead, but they are playing much better. I think now, though, I'm almost ready to declare the Angels dead. I mean, they're a walking, wounded pitching staff. They got nobody, and that looks like they're in pretty big trouble right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Angels, you know, they just let that average look on my face. They got really nothing going for them. I mean, you know, Mike Trout is great, and Albert Pujols is putting up a little bit of power numbers. Cole Calhoun's playing really well, and even, you know, Yunel Escobar is hitting over 300, but this pitching staff, it does not have, you know, not anywhere near enough to make it far and, you know, even make the playoffs. So I agree with you. I'm declaring the Angels dead. I'm also declaring the A's dead for lack of pitching and lack of hitting and lack of everything because they stink. But Seattle, you know, they're hanging around. I think a lot of that depends on the big three in that lineup, Seager, Cano, and Cruz. If they keep hitting at the clip they're hitting at, Seattle's got a chance. Obviously, they got to pitch the ball, and I think a key guy for them is Taijuan Walker. He's got to pitch a little bit better. They've got Felix the Cat still, so they've got that going for him. But a major turning point in this division was, you know, the come up of Jurickson Profar. I mean, the guy was the number one prospect in all of baseball, almost lost two full years to injury, but now, you know, he's hitting 380 over the past few weeks, doing some big things. I think, and Adrian Beltre, I think, is still one of the biggest gamers in the major leagues. I think he's definitely going to be helpful when it comes to that playoff run for Texas. Taking a look at the AL East, it's a three-team race, I'd say, right now. The Yankees are, you know, haven't fallen off quite yet. They're 6.5 out. The Rays have really fallen off the past week. But I would count the Yankees and Rays out. I think the Yankees are just too old, and I don't think they can get it done on the mound. However, they do have that great bullpen, so if they could happen to make a little spark in the next couple months, maybe. But I think this division, you know, is a three-headed monster with Baltimore, Boston, and Toronto. You know, what are you seeing in the AL East, Bub?
Well, first of all, I see the Yankees for the first time that I can remember going to be big sellers at the deadline. I think a lot of guys. I think Aroldis Chapman is going. I think that Beltran's going. He's unbelievable. He's had an unbelievable year so far this year. If Teixeira is healthy and comes back, he's going to go. I think they're going to wipe the cupboard clean. The only one that won't get traded will be A-Rod because nobody will take him. But I think that everybody is going to get wiped out there except for Betances because Aroldis is getting older. And, you know, again, he is what he is, but he can bring a lot of value, and they can go into that rebuilding process. I think that at the end of the day, Boston is the best team there. I think they're the deepest. I think they've got the best shot. And then I would look at Baltimore. I think Toronto's kind of cooked, too, because their pitching sucks as well. So,
yeah, well, you know, I think the Yankees and the Rangers would be perfect suitors because, you know, the Rangers have the second-worst bullpen in the league. And like you said, you know, there's not really a point in keeping such a great bullpen when you can't win games. And the Yankees, I mean, they're getting older. You know, Brett Gardner, Jacoby Ellsbury aren't, you know, the young studs that they used to be. And not to say that they couldn't contribute to a playoff team, but this Yankees team is not going anywhere. And like you said, I think A-Rod probably stays there because who the hell would want him? But, I mean, this Boston team, another, you know, like a half game out right now, they're scary. I mean, that first six in that lineup, along with, you know, Chris Young, who's been platooning in left field and is hitting about 330 as well. I mean, these are some scary guys, and they're just getting better. I mean, Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts. I mean, these are young guys, along with Dustin Pedroia, who, you know, is a proven MVP. David Ortiz is having an MVP-like year. I mean, this is a scary team that I would have to say behind the Cubs is probably the second favorite for the World Series right now. But, you know, talking about the Cubs, I read an insane stat today that John Lackey's 2.88 ERA is the worst among all five members of the Cubs rotation. I mean, that's absolutely mind-blowing. You know, what do you think?
It's unbelievable, and John Lackey is having, you know, arguably one of his best seasons. I mean, you know, John Lackey, his first appearance in the majors, he was a rookie, pitched a Game 7 for the Angels the year they won the World Series, and he's had a very good career. And all of a sudden, you know, he got himself in shape. He started eating right, and he's rejuvenated with a great young Cubs team. I think it is insane. Of course, I think if I were to rank them out of any other way, though, I would say that Arrieta, Lester, and then Lackey. I think Hendricks has had some great benefits and had some great performances, as well as Hamill. But I think both Hamill and so, you know, Hendricks and Hamill, I think they'll revert back to form. I think this is, you know, again, baseball is a great game of statistics. It ebbs and flows, but at the end of the year, typically a guy who's been around long enough, he's going to revert back to his true form, and that's what I see for those two guys.
Yeah, you know, even with that, I think the Cubs still have enough firepower to take home this division. Taking a quick look around the rest of the league, AL Central, our White Sox, you know, second favorite team, they're falling apart. Fourth place, James Shields' debut was a disaster. Like I said, Detroit, here they come, second place behind Cleveland. Kansas City starting to shape up a little bit. You know, taking a look at the National League, I think Washington and the Mets is still a great race. You know, the Marlins are a game over 500, so they're still fighting for something. But I think Washington and the Mets take this down to the last week of the season. A lot of great pitching there. And what do we got? The NL West, the Dodgers hanging in there ever so slightly. You think the Dodgers take it, or does San Francisco hold on?
I think San Francisco's by far a superior team to the Dodgers, and the Dodgers continue to have struggles. They continue to lose pitching. Must be something out in that Los Angeles area between the Angels and the Dodgers. They keep losing pitching. But I think that San Francisco runs away and wins it easy.
Yeah, I think they do too. I mean, it's been really interesting, though, to watch, you know, Julio Urias pitch for the Dodgers the past couple weeks. I mean, he's a great young prospect, having a little trouble with his control right now, but, you know, nonetheless, is a great guy to watch, and especially with another great lefty in that team in Clayton Kershaw. You know, a lot of good stuff over there. So this wraps up another week of The Sporting Edge with Xander and Bubba. If you missed the show, you want to check it out, go to libertytalk.fm. You can find us on that page. You know, it was another great week, and we will see you again next week. We got MLB. We're going to have the NBA Finals wrapped up. NHL Finals are done. And then I think we start looking at some fantasy football. So we'll see y'all next week.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.